So this is lecture 24. We've had some of our audience members away for several days. And the 2 weeks ago when they had a conference, and we all were away last week for a spring break. So it may be useful for several reasons to have a slight review. And this review will, in principle, cover the highlights of the three lectures that the Sanibel people missed. So this covers lectures 21, 22, and 23 in a modest amount of time. We introduced the ground state of a harmonic oscillator. So I'm reviewing for all of us, because we were away for a week plus, Sanibel people. So that was annihilated by the annihilation operator. Omega is a parameter. I will very rarely use it. More normally we will set omega equal to 1. If I take e to the minus q times capital P, e to the I little p times capital Q, all divided by h bar, let that act on this state. By the way, this state will be normalized, so it's unity. That will define our family of coherent states depending on the two real parameters, p and q. We'll take capital P and capital Q to be an irreducible family of self-adjoint operators, which satisfy the Heisenberg commutation rules. These vectors had a certain amount of properties of use to us. Let me just write the adjoint vector. Pretty obvious situation. Written that way. These were all normalized vectors. And they were such that if I had subtracted two of them and looked at the norm, this would go to zero as the point P prime, Q prime in phase space went to the point PQ. So they were continuously labeled. Indeed, we can write down the overlap function without difficulty. That's I over 2 H bar. P plus P prime, Q minus Q prime, minus 1 over 4 H bar, P minus P prime quantity squared plus Q minus Q prime quantity squared. So this overlap never vanished. These were vectors, no two of which are orthogonal to each other. Nevertheless, they satisfy the very important resolution of identity given by this superposition over one-dimensional projection operators, which, like most resolutions of identity, has a similar appearance, gives us the identity operator, but not as a superposition of orthogonal projection operators, but as definitely not the case. We talked about mappings from phase space into Hilbert space. I would like to map a single point into a single vector over here, a normalized vector. I can't do that arbitrarily without careful labeling. But if I put in coordinates, P's and Q's, then I can use those names to label the vector. So that's exactly what we're doing over here. taken a point and mapped it that way. If I choose a different set of coordinates for these points, let me try the blue, see if that's going to work. And I map a point here over to that. P bar and Q bar, where this is P bar and that's Q bar, say. I would like to have those vectors to be the same. Now, in point of fact, it's not absolutely necessary they be the same exactly. It should be in the same array. Array in quantum mechanics means I deal with all the unit vectors which are equal up to a phase. So this time I want to introduce the concept that I am willing to tolerate a phase change between these objects, and G is a function of the phase space variables, which is connected with the canonical transformation that goes between PQ and P bar Q bar. So here we go. This is new today. I'm willing to extend to include, let's put it that way. And you remember how we've defined canonical transformations before, following, for example, Goldstein's book. There's a generator F depending on the independent variables Q bar and Q, which connects this one form. But I can write it in another way, and I would like to do that by putting in a function G, in which I've taken the independent variables to be P and Q. That means P bar is a function of P and Q, and Q bar is a function of P and Q. Anyway, from the one that you're usually familiar with, there's a simple transformation which brings you into this form that identifies the function capital G, which up to a pure constant is given by this equation, and I will ignore that constant altogether, and that is the G that appears here. So that's an alternative prescription for the association of the coherent states under a canonical transformation. It makes no difference whatsoever in objects of this kind, because this is a projection operator, and a phase vector on the left will cancel with a phase vector on the right. So this formula is absolutely unchanged if I do it in different canonical coordinates. In fact, the projection operators are the very, very, very same projection operators as they were before. I hope my underlining got that point well across. And the last time, again, we were together, we talked about the coherent state propagator. I just want to write down a kind of summary set of formulas appropriate to that. We took the coherent state representation of the so-called evolution operator, e to the minus I script H, our Hamiltonian, capital T divided by H bar, and ket P prime Q prime. And we found a relation for that which could be given by limit as epsilon went to zero, n goes to infinity, n plus one epsilon equal to capital T of a collection of integrals, product L equals 0 to capital N of the overlap of coherent state label L plus 1 with coherent state label L minus I epsilon over H bar matrix elements in the same states of the Hamiltonian operator. Product L equals 1 to capital N over the separate Liouville measures. That was what we called our best formula for our mathematical approximation to it, but we are cussed physicists, so we'd like to interchange limits with integration, and we write down for the integrand the expression, the form it takes for continuous and differentiable paths of which there are none. But nevertheless, we do it anyway. And that will be of the form PQ dot minus HPQ DG DP DQ, or capital H here, was the symbol associated with the operator script H by means of diagonal coherent state matrix. That was the original version of coherent state propagator. But an alternative version was also developed, interesting in its own right, based on a different symbol. And let me briefly summarize that. We also discussed what kind of operators we might get if instead of the unit function we put in here, we put in a different function, h of pq, different weighting on those projection operators. And we found, yes, that will make an operator. And in general, believe it or not, surprisingly, at first, we can make any operator we like this way. It covers all the operators. That may necessitate a rather wild little h, but that's OK. Maybe it's a useful thing to remind you what is the connection of the operator form here with this C number function. Let me do it up here because I have too much of a habit of writing too low on the board. If I take PQ, expectation value of a sum over M and N, coefficients A, M, N, Q plus, no, Q minus IP power M, Q plus IP power N, that's so-called normal ordering, PQ, then the answer is given by sum AMN, just replace the operators by the C numbers, Q minus IP to power M, Q plus IP to power N. In other words, normal ordered forms of the Hamiltonian are one-to-one in their functional form. This symbol, little h over here, has a different behavior. If I take the same functional form, Q, M, well, I got it'll be a little different, so let me do it differently. Plus IP, Q minus IP, N, it's like I've taken the complex conjugate, actually. PQ, PQ, DP, DQ over 2 pi h bar, and then integrate that. I will get an operator which is written sum a m n q plus I p to the m q minus I p power n. What is different? What is different is on the left-hand side we have the pluses, then the minuses. Over here we have the minuses and the pluses. This is normal ordering, which is the key for associating for that symbol. This is anti-normal ordering. Which is the key for this one. Anyway, polynomials go to polynomials in this language. Of course, if I make a coordinate transformation, then all bets are off. This hasn't changed, but the functional form of this will change. It may no longer be polynomials, for example, depending on the functional form of my transformation. This is the one where it's transparent in this choice of coordinates here, so-called canonical group coordinates. Okay. Well, using this tool, we found there is yet another formula for a coherent state path integral, which in some ways is a little more elegant than the one we have over there. This one dates from 1960.
this one I'm talking about now dates from approximately 1970. And it says, the same matrix element of interest of the evolution operator giving us the propagator can be written as, okay, again, I write down a discrete form, limit epsilon to zero, n to infinity. This time it's n times epsilon equals t. And then I have product L equals zero to n, PL plus one, QL plus one overlap with PL, QL. It's the end of that product. Then I have product PL, product from L equal one to capital N, dPL dQL over two pi h bar. That part's the same, but I have an e to the minus I epsilon h of PL QL divided by h bar. If my Hamiltonian is Hermitian, that makes little h real. And conversely, and if I have a real little h bar, then I have a pure phase vector. And that's really quite odd. Indeed, this might be useful to write down what this looks like. We already had an expression for that on the board, so I'll quickly do that. That's I over 2 h bar summation PL plus 1 plus PL with the 2 inside, looks a little bit better. QL plus 1 minus QL minus a quarter h bar PL plus 1 minus PL squared plus QL plus 1 minus QL squared. Notice I'm using the omega equal 1 simplification here. Minus I epsilon over h bar little h of PL QL summation product of our usual integration measures. Okay, point being, this is really quite elegant. There's a nice phase factor, a damping factor, which guarantees all the integrals exist, and all we need to do is take our standard kinds of limits here to make that thing work. Nevertheless, we won't stop there. Not caring about rigor, we will interchange the integration and the limit and write down the formal expression. This is e to the I by h bar integral pq dot minus a little h of p and q dt script dp script dq. In other words, we have a different formal expression than we had before. How can that be? Because neither of them make sense. Neither of them make sense. They are both formal expressions. They are linear functionals, but giving them proper definitions by means of an expression of this kind, this is mathematically satisfactory, or an expression of this kind, which is mathematically elegant, is clear that these have different regularizations, different lattice prescriptions they're generated.
John?
Sir?
Small question on the bottom line, just to the left where you're standing there. Yeah, is just inside that sum in the exponent, is there a 2 in the denominator of the first factor, or is that just a squiggle?
That is a 2.
That is a 2. Good, thank you. That's what I thought.
And you can see how in the limit of continuum paths, this is averaging the p, so I get p at the point in the midpoint, divided times dq, which is exactly this expression here. Cancel the dt, I get the dq. I get the h integral here, which comes straight away from that. And this term, in your continuum differentiable path approximation, disappears, because ql plus 1 minus ql squared summation, I divide by epsilon squared, multiply by epsilon squared. This part takes care of the derivative. This part takes care of the dt. Then I have an epsilon in front, which goes to zero and annihilates that term. So this term does not make a contribution at the end. However, I would like to draw your attention to that very argument here. Here is this term in that form. This is the formal discussion of how that term contributes to this expression right here, the formal path integral. But I want to remind you, because this was a trigger, that very functional form, and this expression here, crazy as it looks, keeping this epsilon finite and the others going to zero, was a stimulating idea for one of the next ideas we're going to talk about. All right. After we talked about those items, I've lost page 3 here. Aha, you're hiding. After those, we went back into some philosophy, as is our custom, and we raised the question, what does H of PQ mean? For example, I want to quantize a harmonic oscillator. Somebody tells me my Hamiltonian is simply P. Now, if that's all I know, if that is P, and I don't know that it's the harmonic oscillator, I challenge anybody to put that in this expression or whatever you want to do, and come out with a harmonic oscillator. You can also take an harmonic oscillator and put it in coordinates in which this is the form of the Hamiltonian. In short, the functional form, the mathematical expression for the Hamiltonian does not encode its physical meaning. That has to come from somewhere else. We discussed last time about the symplectic form, which is on your classical phase-space manifold. Classical phase-space manifold, very loose little thing. You put a little structure on it in the form of a symplectic form, but symplectic forms have the beautiful property that in every coordinate system, every canonical coordinate system, they have functionally the same expression, dp wedge dq. If I have many degrees of freedom, then I sum over the individual degrees of freedom. I can put it in this functional form no matter how many, let's say they're finitely many, degrees of freedom. That's rather striking when you think about it, because this is a 2J dimensional manifold. I have a general functional form. If I chose some kind of tensor notation, let me put both indices upstairs for the moment. Tensor, some kind of tensor notation, P and Q, I have to call them X's, dxj wedge dxk, where these j's run, these indices run over all possible 2j values. This could be a very general anti-symmetric functional form in here, and it will in arbitrary coordinates, but there always exists canonical coordinates, not only in which the omega becomes x independent, but it can be put into form of a block form of ones and minus ones. So that's exactly what that looks like. Okay. So there's no help in asking what is the functional form of the symplectic form itself. It doesn't tell you anything. It says, I am in canonical coordinates, and I am always looking the same. So there's absolutely no information in there. We've got to do something else. And that's when we introduced the idea of the shadow metric. I call it shadow metric because it is not part of classical mechanics. Classical mechanics does not introduce, does it make any use of a metric on phases? Question.
Yes. How does the metric on the configuration manifold affect the? I mean, affect the face space?
His question was, how did the metric on the configuration space affect the phase space?
I didn't mean phase space.
So we have a comment here from, yes?
I didn't mean flat space time.
Flat space time.
Flat space.
Well, that's the metric on space that we want to talk about, flat space?
That's the configuration space.
Let me beg off on that, because I tell you, talking about the symplectic form, you have not yet put on even a metric on the configuration space. Where does that metric come from? It comes from when you say, my goodness, I'm introducing kinetic energy, which is x dot j, x dot k, times g, j, k of x. There is where you first introduce the metric on your configuration space. And that is particular to a specific system, Hamiltonian, or in this case, Lagrangian. It didn't have to look like that. It didn't have to be like that. A requirement. That's an extra structure that the dynamics puts onto your kinematics. But from a kinematical point of view, there is absolutely no geometry other than the symplectic form on the phase space. Sir, you have another question?
He
can hold his question. Okay, shadow metric. So I am going to put on a metric on the phase space. It's not useful in classical mechanics, or it's not used in classical mechanics. Later in the course, I will try to find time to tell you how quantum mechanics forces you to have a metric on phase space. So it's no big shock that a metric, and I'll write one down here, d sigma squared is dp squared plus dq squared. Yes, I've chosen particular special coordinates. I've chosen coordinates which make it look like Cartesian coordinates. And Cartesian coordinates can only exist on flat space. So I have even, with this one statement, I have put on my phase space manifold a restriction that it is flat, just like the floor of this room. And therefore that it will allow, as we know, for flat space, it will allow Cartesian coordinates. And I tell you that those are relatively special. Do you remember Dirac's quote? I used the screen, I think, for that one time, saying the prescription to go from classical to quantum mechanics works only in Cartesian coordinates. We're beginning to encounter what I believe is a true explanation of that statement. Okay, so I have a metric, and I'm going to put it on my phase space. Now, it's divorced from classical mechanics, but it has a role to play. I keep this metric in my pocket. Each of you, I offer one for each of you to have in your pockets. And you bring it out and look at it, and we're going to look at it in the following way. I make an assignment of a mathematical expression, metric form of physical meaning. And just to keep you honest over here, we'll put symplectic form too. So I tell you, 1/2 plus p squared q squared as a functional form for some quantity, right? Let's call it Hamiltonian, that's what it's going to be used for. If the metric is in this form, I will call that a harmonic oscillator. And of course, the symplectic world is dp dq and will always be. I now tolerate you are making coordinate transformations. You give me a functional form for your Hamiltonian called p. Now, I'm using the same symbol here. Perhaps I should use a P bar over there, but that would color your opinion. Let's just call it P again. In the same moment, I realize, well, he asked me, what does it correspond to? I look in my pocket, I pull out my secret, my shadow metric, and I look at it, and in your coordinates, I find it reads dp squared over 2p plus 2p dq squared. It is not in Cartesian coordinates. I make a mental
transformation. I've done this enough now, I can do it quickly in my head. I make a mental transformation from this functional form back into Cartesian coordinates that changes this functional form into that functional form, and I can therefore tell because this codes, encodes, whereas the symplectic form did not, this encodes the fact that you have made a genuine coordinate transformation. And this is also a harmonic oscillator, and over here it's still dp, dq, nothing has changed. Now, a third person comes up to me and says, this is my Hamiltonian, it's in P, functional form P. I pull out my thing and I say, look at you. You're still with Cartesian coordinates. So the physics of your problem is right out of that. Now, we don't have a name for that. If it was P squared, that would be called a free particle. But this is going to be called the momentum entity. Okay, that's the name of that part. Problem, whatever. And, of course, these things have not changed at all. Point B, if I use a metric, I can use it as a reference point in order to decide whether the functional form you've given me, the mathematical expression, is or is not what you say it is. To take a phrase out of the common day parlance, I can use my metric to judge the validity of your statement that what you've given me is a document about weapons of mass destruction or not, because whether it depends on the coordinate system you have given it to me. The symplectic form cannot do that. Sir?
Would it be correct to say then that classical mechanics sort of tacitly assumes some shadow metric?
Classical mechanics by itself, yes, I will say it assumes a shadow metric. And just as you do, if I draw you a map of how to get from my house to your house, like that, you say, hey, give me some coordinates, right? Give me some signposts. Or I tell you, this is the way you go to Jacksonville. You go this way, and then over here, and then down here, and then over that way. And unfortunately, this is a detour which is 25 miles off to the side, but you don't notice, you don't perceive that from here. I haven't put on a proper scale or metric. You should always ask that. So yes, I do claim that the P's and Q's are understood by the worker, but they are not part of the mathematics. I want to make that absolutely clear to you, because the formula which is still on the board, say, take this formula here. This is to quantize a certain system and give me a spectrum of an operator. And of course, we know that the harmonic oscillator has integer gaps and harmonic oscillator of something else. I want to get that out of this quantity, and yet, where this thing is said to be P, good luck. Okay. Now, let's begin with new ideas.
We are basically right there.
This expression, or the expression we had before, where it was capital H, so what expression am I talking about? I'm talking about our formal phase space path integral expression, PQ dot minus capital H PQ DT DP DQ or E to the I H bar PQ2 minus our new symbol little h PQ DT DP DQ. We've been studying a lot of these expressions, gentlemen, and I now point out to you not only are they mathematically meaningless, I assert they are physically meaningless. By themselves, they are physically meaningless. They do not tell you to what system they refer. Okay. Now we're moving up well past our epicycle stage of things. We're about to introduce Newtonian mechanics.
to solve problems. I'm going to introduce you to the idea of the Wiener measure regularization. Phase space path integrals. This comes from 1985. Joint work with Ingrid Doshi. Brief reminder. Recall what Gelfand and Jagloom did in 1956. They took the original Feynman path integral and introduced not a lattice regularization, but an auxiliary term, 1 over 2 nu, x dot squared of t dt, limit nu to infinity. We know that this term makes a bona fide measure, Wiener measure. In that measure, we're trying to integrate this quantity. The paths will be continuous paths, but they will nowhere be differentiable. That seems to be a difficulty because we're asking this question of the integrand, x dot squared. X dot is supposed to be infinity, x dot squared would be infinity. Integrate that, you still get infinity, not good. But the idea of these gentlemen was to put it together in some complex parameter measure, dxc nu, we call that, and take the limit outside, limit to infinity. Should write on the bottom of the board. So this C means you just put this term together with that term, you have a complex coefficient in front. And we found that was not a countably additive measure, that was finitely additive. C nu only finitely additive. What does that mean? It means it's no better than a linear functional. But who cares? You've started with a linear functional anyway. You haven't made any progress. But we shouldn't be surprised by that result. Nor should Gelfand and Jagloom have been so brazen to propose it. Because we are asking this expression to absorb an infinite quantity here. And thank God the answer is a bad measure. Because if you could cure impossible problems that way, we could go a long way. Okay, that didn't work. That didn't work. Couldn't put that inside. Now, comes the following idea. Suggested originally by exactly this idea. Let us take our, I'm going to use a little h as an example. Formal path integral and put in something very much like Gelfand and Jagloom, p dot squared plus q dot squared dt, and take the limit nu to infinity. Perhaps there is a nu dependent normalization factor. This is a regularized form for this path integral. I want to see if I can get an alternative regularized form for the same path integral here. I don't make a lattice in time. This is a continuous time regularization. Just as Gelfand and Jagloom had proposed over there. Okay. Coming from the vantage point where we stand today, we can regard this as just another attempt
to do a Gelfand-Jaglom-like correction, except it's not that we have x dot squared to deal with it. We have pq dot.
Let's look at this from two perspectives, both the mathematical and the physical.
So I'll start off by mathematical. Can we give mathematical sense to this? Well, we know that the P and Q here would lead to Wiener measures. P and Q then would be concentrated on continuous paths. As continuous paths, this function, H of P and Q, is no trouble. But they are not differentiable. So, question, yes?
So, if you want to put that in a lattice, then would you have the extra term as PL plus 1 minus PL by 2, is it by 2 divided by 2 coming there or not?
So the question is, what would I do if I wanted to make a lattice of this? I would approximate that by PL plus 1 minus PL squared, divide by a single epsilon, there's two of them from here, and multiply by 1. So it is indeed very much like this, except the epsilons are coming in a different way. This epsilon, which was here on the outside, is simply being dropped. It's being replaced by 1 over nu, and that limit as that epsilon of that sense going to 0 or nu going to infinity is taken as the final step of the calculation. It is as if you go to the continuum limit here for these guys, you let all these epsilons go to 0 except the one in front, and you take that one outside as the limit. That was actually done, tried, bizarre idea. How can you take limits, one going, the other not? But the answer was correct. So then we had to figure out why.
But we can give different prescriptions which would lead to the same limit.
Of course. Absolutely right. Okay, mathematics. The trouble was before in what we'll call the kinematic term, the x dot squared term. Now we have to look at pq dot dt, but that's integral p dq divided by dt dt. Oh, well, let's go to p dq. Well, we've seen p dq before. That's what's called a stochastic integral. So we're going to replace that thing by that, which can be given proper mathematical meaning for two Wiener paths. Indeed, if I write it as PDQ, I write it as PL, or rather summation than limit, PL plus 1 plus PL divided by 2 times QL plus 1 minus QL. That looks rather Stratonovich-like. So that's an S integral. Here's an I integral, PDQ, limit, summation PL, QL plus 1 minus QL. That's Ito. Let's take Stratonovich minus Ito. So that is PL plus a half minus PL divided by 2, QL plus 1 minus QL. Limit. What does that limit look like? It looks like, in our language of Ito calculus, it looks like dpt times dqt. Wow, we've seen things like that before. And that's why we did it before. We talked about our friend Wiener measure, Wiener paths, and we saw that dw of t quantity squared could be replaced by, gentlemen, who knows, dt. And if there were two Wiener paths,
that were independent and how would I tell that? I would tell that by looking at e to the alpha w1 of t plus beta w2 of t, t1 and t2, it doesn't even matter, at different times, and look at the joint correlation functional of those, and if we factored into the product of the two, then they would be independent. But of course, these are Wiener paths. We know what these functional forms are. This is e to the alpha w1 plus beta w2 squared average. The cross term is what's of interest. W1 of t1, w2 of t2. That's the cross term here. That will tell me whether I can, with that product, the thing will break into a product of two separate terms or not. So if this thing is zero, this is what we concluded, was that w1 and w2 are independent.
Question? That dw squared equal to dt,
yes,
is that generally true or is it only in the sense of e2?
It's with probability 1, according to Ito.
But we know the results are different if we use Chadanovich rules instead of Ito rules.
The results are different for this question or this question, but that's a different question. This is the same for Ito or Stratonic. For example, this has to follow from W1 of t plus delta minus, just W of t plus delta minus W of t quantity squared expectation value. We know that answer is delta. Independent of Stratonovich and whatever. So this would be d of W of t squared expectation value is dt. That is true, independent of anybody. What is the miracle is that this is not a stochastic variable, not a random variable. It's a deterministic variable, and it's equal to dt. Okay, now we can go back and look at the way we put in p and q. And we will see that p and q are independent of each other. They come in product form in the measure. Therefore, their characteristic functions would be separate. So that means that this thing is identically zero for us. It didn't matter whether we chose Ito or Stratonovich. And of course, we will choose Stratonovich because it makes life Stratonovich a lot easier for changing of variables because ordinary rules of calculus hold. So calculus rules valid. Okay, let me pause today. I'm probably up to the time anyway. We had some homework that I threw on.